Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. School vacation week is over. The kids were back in class today, which makes me think that right about now, a lot of you are in the car driving your kids home. So, younger listeners, can you hear me? I know you're there, back there maybe in the back seat, facing the daily torture of being forced to listen to NPR. Ugh, parents, how cruel they can be. So I'm here to help. This next story is just for you. It's by Boston author Jack Gantos, and it comes from his book Dead End in Norvelt, which won this year's prestigious Newbery Award for Children's Literature. It's a story about a boy, also named Jack Gantos, and he's just walked into the home of his neighbor, Mrs. Volker. And what he encounters there is, well, it's a little odd. Mrs. Volker is standing by her kitchen stove. A burner is turned up on high. And Mrs. Volker has her hands deep inside a tall pot. Jack Gantos takes it from here.
Miss Volker, I asked quietly, trying to be ridiculously calm like when doctors talk to insane people in the movies. I didn't want her to snap and try and kill me like some psychotic lunatic. You do realize you are cooking your hands down in that big pot? Of course I do, dear, she sputtered and bit down on her lip and hissed as if her words were driven by steam. Now please turn it off. I sprang out of my chair and twisted the knob on the stove. Arr, she cried out. I think I may have really melted them this time. She lifted her hands out of the pot, and they were melting. Lumps of glowing yellow flesh oozed down her forearms and spattered onto the floor. Oh, mercy, I cried and fidgeted up and down like a terrified squirrel. Miss Volker, what have you done to yourself? Turn the cold water on over the sink, she ordered. I think I may have done permanent damage. I nearly flew to the sink and turned the spigot handle. Give me your hands, I said. Quick! She stumbled toward me, then held up the sagging stumps of her melted arms. I hesitated, but there was nothing else to do except run away screaming, so I grabbed what I thought were her wrists. The warm, lifeless flesh squished between my fingers as I tugged her forward and held her ruined hands under the water. She stamped the floor and groaned in hoarsey agony as her eyes rolled back into her head. You'll be fine, I jabbered, about five jittery times in a row, and each time my mind echoed back, you won't be fine, won't ever be fine, because you just melted your hands off. Ah, she sighed with a relaxed shudder, and after a moment her eyes leveled out. That feels better, she said calmly. Now turn off the water. I did, and she held her arms up. Now peel it off, she ordered. Peel what off? I asked. The sticky stuff on my arm, she said impatiently. Then she held a rounded stump up to her mouth, bit off a cooked chunk, and spit it out into the trash. I felt faint. I staggered back a few steps, and by then my nose was spewing like an elephant bathing himself. Please, Miss Volker, I said with my voice quavering, please don't eat your own flesh. Oh, Jesus, crust. Mom didn't know Miss Volker had gone insane, and I knew I would go insane too if I had to watch her cannibalize her own body down to the white boiled bones. You're bleeding all over the floor, she said, turning her attention toward me as if she wanted to wash her flesh meal down with my blood. Let me have a look at you. She reached toward me with her deformed stumps and touched my face, and at that moment I yelped out loud and dropped over dead.
That's Jack Gantos reading from his Newbery Award-winning book, Dead End in Norvelt. Jack, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, so we have a lot of families and parents who drive their kids around in cars during our program, so I can just imagine there are kids in back seats right now all over the greater Boston area going, ew, awesome! How do you come up with scenes like that that seem to so perfectly fit the sort of gorgeous grotesquery of a child's imagination?
I was always one of those kids that really observed the odd moment. And so when my uncle was hit by a car and had a metal plate put in his head, I used to try and stick magnets to the top of it. And when I saw somebody who had terrible arthritis boiling their hands in paraffin in order to relieve and relax the muscles a little bit, I thought, oh my God, they're boiling their hands off. And then I realized, of course, later on, it gave them relief.
Fascinating. So there were actual experiences and memories from your own childhood that have worked their way into your fiction. Tell us a little bit more about how you became a writer to begin with. Because a lot of kids see, you know, crazy things when they're growing up, but most of them don't end up being an award-winning author.
It is true that kids notice all the really dark cracks in life. But for me, my sister had a diary. She was older than me. She would sit at the dining room table, and when anyone in the family would walk by, she would look harshly at them and go, mm-hmm, and then she would write something down. And invariably, we'd all say, well, what'd you say? And she would say, I'm not telling. And just that very act, she would galvanize everybody in the family. We all wanted to know what she was saying, and that seemed so powerful to me. So I got a diary from my mother, and then, of course, I didn't know what to write in it. And so I started writing the things that I thought were kind of a little bizarre, a little off. And so I started collecting little bits and pieces of stories.
Mm. Well, tell us a little bit about what Dead End in Norvelt is about.
I was born in the town of Norvelt. And Norvelt, when you look at the name of the town, it's named after Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt had such a big heart, and she looked out at the country. And she saw so many out-of-work coal miners and farmers and factory workers. And in our section of western Pennsylvania, there were a lot of out-of-work needy people. And so she concocted this organization in the government to start these homestead towns. So the government would buy acreage. In this case, they bought a 250-acre farm. They parceled it out into 250 houses. They designed the houses like little Cape Codders. They had a community factory, community farm, community chicken hatchery, and it worked on a helping hand, community feeling. You would work for me for 2 hours, I would work for you for 2 hours. You would pay me in canned peaches, I would pay you in pickles, mm-hmm. You know. Sort of quasi-socialist setup in the town. When the war came and the factories opened up and we needed the farms going and the coal mines got back into operation, then everybody started making a lot of money. And when my dad came back after the war, the last thing he wanted to do was live in Norvelt. Uh-huh. And the first thing my mother wanted to do was live in Norvelt because she just loved the community values. And my dad wanted a piece of the American pie.
So the protagonist of the book has your name, Jack Gantos.
Yes.
So how autobiographical is Dead End in Norvelt? Because, you know, it's not uncommon these days for writers of adult fiction to, you know, sometimes use their own name. But I can't recall a writer whose audience is middle grade fiction readers using himself or his own story as part of what's in the book.
Well, I frequently do it because I sort of believe that even though the book itself is built on a solid foundation of nonfiction, the town exists. The neighbors that I had were all there. And my family did have that kind of argument about leaving or staying. What kind of values? What kind of life? But then as a child, I was also a big reader. I was a very bookish child. And I realized that, you know, when you look in the mirror, you only see the physical self. Mm-hmm. But when you close your eyes and see yourself, you see the massive fictional adaptation of yourself. It is like another city, a universe built into you. And so for me to use my name, yes, it's my body, but because there's fiction built on the foundation of Norvelt, there's fiction built on the foundation of Jack Gantos, too.
Ah. We heard that scene with Miss Volker. Young Jack ends up helping her write obituaries. Why obituaries?
Well, I ended up helping Miss Volker because I made a huge mistake of judgment. My father had been in the Navy, and one of the souvenirs my father had, among many, was a Japanese sniper rifle. And I used to play with it. I would stand on the picnic table in my backyard, and I would use binoculars to look at the drive-in theater, which was it seemed like miles away. And there was always a war movie playing in the 60s, and I would take that sniper rifle and I would aim at enemy soldiers
on the screen.
And, you know, and I would just use it as a prop. I couldn't hear the dialogue, but I would act out all the dialogue on the picnic table, and it would just be my own little game out there. And one day, I pulled the trigger, and the dang thing fired off.
Oh, no.
Blew me right off the table, and of course, my mother thought I'd shot myself. At any rate, I was grounded. The only thing that got me out of it was Miss Volker, who had been hired by Eleanor Roosevelt to be the town nurse. She was very old by this time, and she had terrible arthritis. And so she could no longer write her medical reports and what she called her final medical report, which was an obituary.
So this is true? This actually happened
yes,
to you?
Yes, this part is true. So my mother would loan me. But my mother would loan me out to anybody. But my mother, she would loan me down, and Miss Volker, who could no longer hold a pen, would dictate these obituaries. She was more Howard Zinn than Howard Zinn.
This was a real people's history of people of Norveld.
Absolutely. She would do the obit, and then she would connect the obit to a big This Day in History blowout, so that she could show that even though you live in a small town, that the tissue of the individual is applied to the larger history of the world itself.
So this explains a lot, because as I was reading Dead End in Norveld, I thought, how terrific is this that, you know, you definitely have the sort of yuck factor, the excerpt that you just read, but there is also so much history. It seemed to me to be an unusual combination to actually go to real history and put it in a book for young readers, because you don't see that often. Usually there's sort of this great divide between the supernatural and fantasy and a straight history book that kids are supposed to read.
Yes, and I agree with you. And I think one of the things that Miss Volker was very much trying to do was to take history and make it alive. Because I think a lot of times when you read the history books, it's like looking at a taxidermed animal. Mm-hmm. You know, it just sits there collecting dust behind glass. And I think Miss Volker firmly believed that history was alive and well. Our past history taught us what we should view today, and today's history should teach us how we should look into the future. And she really believed that history was a living entity, that all of us should really understand our position in sort of the dimensional universe of history.
So fascinating to me that you got this early exposure in storytelling, and you were obviously attracted to writing through seeing the power your sister had with her diary.
Yes.
You've made an entire career out of it, largely focusing on young readers. It seemed to me sparked that same excitement about reading stories and looking at the world around you through the eyes of children. I mean, does it seem like that was an inevitable progression for you?
I think so. Books impressed me deeply as a child. When I would read a book at night, I had a whole ritual. I would wait for the last chapter. I would go to bed. I would turn on my bedside lamp. I would read that last chapter about as slowly as a person could read. I would read between the lines, the white space, like I was reading it with a marrow spoon, you know, just getting everything out of it. And finally I'd turn off the light. I would close my eyes. And I could see the entire book. It would come back as if it had stepped on stage. The curtains opened. The characters came out. I could enter the stage. I could talk to the characters. If there were parts of the book I didn't like, I could rewrite them, rearrange them. And so for me, I always lived inside every book. Now, that experience of reading as a child, when you move on up as an adult, you remember that experience. And it seems to me that writing books for those readers, young readers, I am writing for the most fertile, richly imaginative, plastic, sticky-minded readers in the world. Mm. I have the best readers.
At the risk of dating myself or sounding overly nostalgic, I wonder if things have changed for childhood a lot. You're a writer for young readers. And in this day and age, it seems like there are so many more sources of competition for a young person's attention than there were when, you know, I was a child or you were a child. There are mobile devices, computers, televisions, all the sporting events that they may have to go to. Do you worry that kids don't have enough of that quiet, solitary space required to be great readers?
That's a constant argument. It's a constant question, let's say. And we've all looked at it, and we've all really tried to come up with the correct response, not the response that would represent the world as we would like it to be. You know, like, oh, yes, every child sits down and reads 6 hours a day. They're so fabulous, those children. No, that's not the world we live in. But the world we live in may not be all that different than the world I remember. Not every kid was like me and went to the library before school started and then stayed behind after. But there were a handful of us. We would talk about books and share books and so on. There is always that same thing in every class I go to. And I go to 40 schools a year. And they are very articulate and well-read. Not every child. But there is still that core that reminds me of the core I had when I was a child. So I think that's still there.
Jack, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure speaking with you.
And with you. It's been a long time I've listened to you, and it's such a thrill for me.
Jack Gantos is the author of the Newbery Award-winning Dead End in Norvelt. There's an excerpt of the book at our website, radioboston.org.